When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, I'm Cess Busby, editor of Flying Solo. Welcome to our weekly podcast where we step inside the minds and lives of soloists and small business owners. If gaining access to finance is a concern for your business, then today's podcast is just for you. Kevin Higgins is the executive director at Vantage Performance, and he's an expert in helping businesses turn around their finances. As banks and lenders are looking more and more at protecting their mortgage books and the availability of capital gets tighter, find out how you can improve your chances and increase your lender's confidence so that you can get the funds that you need to succeed. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Nice to be here.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to pick your brain around all things funding and loans and all that kind of thing, which is quite an essential topic for a lot of our business owners at the moment, which are probably going through a lot of significant challenges with the economy being what it is. So, first up, what are some of the common funding challenges that you've observed when it comes to small businesses and sole traders trying to get loans?
Yeah, I think the funding challenges primarily stem from lack of good visibility to provide to the funders who are going to do the deal. So often a bugbear of theirs is that they don't have, well, they've got late information. And often the information is incorrect, or the assumptions underpinning it are just unreasonable. So some of the key things that they kind of ask for is things like three-way forecasts, that's P&L, balance sheet, cash flow projected, because they want to see that whatever they lend is going to be able to be serviced, and those assumptions that are underpinning that serviceability are reasonable. So that, I would say, that's probably one of the biggest challenges that a banker has and a funder, and often the getting the information on time. Sometimes it's that's a bit of a warning sign for banks if they've asked for something and it takes a month to provide that information back. It just tells them that the information's not readily available and at the company's fingertips, and things like financials and data and all that kind of stuff that should be at a business's fingertips, because that demonstrates that they're across everything and it's good live data within the business.
So would you be suggesting then, if someone's going to approach a lender, whether it's a bank or non-bank, for funding, that they really prepare in advance before they go and make the question, what are the key steps that they should be taking to make sure that they look like they're an attractive investment so that they will get the money that they need for their business?
Yeah, I mean, if they demonstrate that they've got a good grasp, I mean, I'll give you another example. The company might be coming to the bank to raise, let's say they want $5 million from the bank. Now, the bank might look at the balance sheet and go, I'm only prepared to lend three. So you need to go back and find the other $2 million within your business. And the reason they're saying that is because they're looking at the balance sheet and they're seeing what we would describe as some lazy capital just sitting on the balance sheet. When I say lazy capital, I mean, working capital. Working capital being debtors, creditors, and stock. So if your debtors, are kind of getting delayed and they're not being collected on time, or if your stock turnover is not industry best practice, then they'll question that and they'll look at that to say, well, you need to go back and review that and make sure that you're doing everything you can to make sure that your cash conversion cycle, which is the moment that you order goods to the other end of the spectrum as to when you're invoicing and collecting those goods, is that as tight as possible. If that's tight as possible, and then the bank's job is then just to fund those peaks and troughs throughout the year when it comes to seasonal kind of ups and downs. So they know that, right, you're doing everything you can to maintain a good tight working capital grasp on the business, and now the bank is just that kind of they'll cover those highs and lows. So yeah, so having a good grasp of that and understanding often. And I think the other thing I would say, you know, the three-way forecasts, I'd say probably 80% of the time the banks get three-way forecasts that are prepared with no real, sense checking of the assumptions. So they might just flatline revenue, or they might flatline cost of goods sold, or whatever that might be. And that, again, that tells the banker, well, no one's really testing this. No one's doing any what-if scenarios, because those are the things that the bank do when they get it as well, or any funder. A good funder will straight away, they'll test revenue. You know, what if revenue declines 5, 10%? What if, you know, what if input costs rise a further 5%? Because we've seen during COVID, that's significantly escalated for a lot of businesses, energy costs, fuel costs, freight and whatnot. So if you're demonstrating that you've actually tested that, then that gives the bank more comfort that, right, we're dealing with a good customer here that's very attuned to their own kind of risks in the business, and you know, we're happy to support them in that respect.
Mm. And so apart from a loan from a traditional lender, what are some other options that small businesses could take advantage of if they're looking for funding?
Yeah, it probably depends on what's required. I mean, there are specialist type funding as well. So for instance, your debtors, there's specialist invoice financing type facilities that just fund your debtors. And when I say invoice finance, that's, it brings, you brings 80% of your debtors forward, say 30 days, and you get that cash hit straight away. And then you kind of pay that
off. So that's a good option if perhaps you're struggling with cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's not for everyone, because it really works for businesses that are the revenues kind of on the increase as well, because it brings cash forward all the time. If your revenue is in decline, it can kind of work against you a little bit. So you really need to be on top of your 13-week cash flow, which is another tool to map out, and your three-way forecast to say, well, if our revenue does decline, is that going to work against us? So, you know, and things like trade finance, that's another example of funding the stock at one end of the spectrum. And normally you can get, up to 120 days before you have to invoice that. And then when you invoice it, it might be that you use the invoice finance function as well, so they can kind of dovetail in. But I would say, before you even look at those type of fundings, it's actually look at the business itself, look at your debtors. What is, where have your debtor days been over time? So it might have been that they were at one stage 35 days. Now they're sitting out at 45 days. So the question is, what do we need to do as a management team to get those 10 days back again? And it may be challenging because the product mix has changed, and customers are kind of, dragging things out. Some things are out of your control. But then that might lead on to another question, is to, are they our ideal customer? I mean, if that customer is stringing us out 60 days before we get paid, whereas we've got other customers here that are paying us within 30 days, well, our 30-day customer is our ideal customer, because we don't have to fund that 30-day gap. So looking at those ideal customers is great, and that's the old 80-20 rule, as far as looking at low margin customers and culling them and just focusing on the high margin and those that are actually going to pay us. And that's the same with your creditors as well. Some of those creditors might be more trouble than what it's worth to actually deal with, from a very onerous kind of supply terms, contract terms. So that's a good excuse to potentially consolidate your creditors and put all your volume through one particular creditor, but negotiate some good rates with them. And by negotiating some good rates and creditor and terms, that might help manage those creditor days as well. You might actually get an extra 10 days potentially from those creditors. And it's interesting. So when you look at the working capital, the creditor days, the debtor days, the stock days, it's only a small incremental improvement in each of those. And when I say incremental, it could be like a better, like 2 days at collecting your invoice. That 2 days could, you know, depending on your turnover, that could be an extra $500,000 at the end of the year. And that $500,000 will go a long way to closing that gap that the bank wasn't going to lend you, because they want to force you to work, to understand your own working capital cycle and cash conversion cycle. So that's the first place I would look. And there's, you know, many ways to improve that.
Mm. And so right at the beginning, we were talking about some of the mistakes that business owners make in terms of going to a bank and looking for funding, and the bank's going, give me the three-way reporting, and then 6 weeks later they finally get it. So obviously that's a fairly common mistake and a bit of a pitfall for small business owners seeking funding. What are some other kind of common pitfalls that you might see, and how could they be best avoided?
Yeah, I think another pitfall I would say is probably just that the whole element of trust and developing that trust relationship with your funder. So rather than, you know, just coming to them when, because often customers come to the banks when they look at their own cash flow and they go, oh, I'm running out of cash, I better get some funds in, or they haven't done enough planning to see any shortfall coming up. So I think having that ongoing dialogue with the banker and developing that trust, and show, and with that trust, you know, the banker then starts getting confidence, because we often say it's a game of confidence, and the more confident the business is, and bridging that confidence between the business and the bank, the more confident the bank are, and the higher likelihood it is that they're going to fund. There's it's interesting. We've got a program that we run at Vantage called. That's a resilience index. So we actually test companies out of a score of 50 as to how resilient they are if there was any economic headwinds and things like that coming up. And often, companies that score kind of 15 out of 50, we would say is a low resilience. And there's probably a highly likelihood they're probably not going to be around in, you know, 5-10 years time. So ticking off in some of those resilience aspects, even if you tick off and, you know, two things a quarter or one a quarter, those are things that go to improving resilience, therefore improving the confidence that a business has, because it's in its ability to get through any economic headwinds, and demonstrating that to the bank is great. So what one of those resilience factors might be, you know, do you know your pipeline sales conversion rate? So a lot of businesses wouldn't know that, like how much gross pipeline do you need in your pipeline for it to convert into revenue? I mean, that's an interesting metric. And if you demonstrate you're all over that metric, again, that's another confidence thing that says to the bank, right, they're across their numbers. Do you have a three-way model? Do you manage your cash flow? And how's that done? Do you know the number one thing you're great at in your business? You know, because often businesses kind of over time, they add on different services, different products. And then when they stop to look at things after 10 years, they go, right, we've now just bloated our customers, as in we've got too many customers and too many products. We need to, you know, start shaping things again. So, though, you know, demonstrating that you're constantly being aware of the business and its resilience if we do get knocked by the next, you know, pandemic or some further disruption to the supply chain, demonstrating that is good for the bank. And it also goes into credit worthiness too. So the bank might have certain element of risk that they are pricing into what they're pricing for those for the lending. So the more you can demonstrate how resilient you are, the lower the pricing is going to be at the end of the day as well. So they, that's another reason to demonstrate to them that, that you're across strategically the business, you're across your channel to markets, and you're constantly revising that as well. That's what the banks wants to see. They don't want to see you lagging behind competitors, because they're funding other people in your industry and they're benchmarking you against others, and they're going to say, right, well, these guys down the road are doing all this. Why are you guys not doing that? You've just been sitting on your hands for, you know, 4 years writing things out. So things like that would give confidence.
Now, a lot of our listeners are sole traders or micro business owners, and I think securing loans for them can be really particularly challenging, often because they've made the mistake of not separating their finances properly. So their personal and business finances are really very intertwined. So what strategies could they use to maybe build a clearer separation between those business and personal finances to start with? And once they've done that, how can they improve their prospects for getting a loan, like their loan eligibility?
Yeah, I think, you know, a focus on paying down debt is probably a good thing to focus on. So any profits that there are in the business that can be, you know, put down into lowering debt. And the lower the debt is, so when it comes to negotiating any finance facilities, they'll be in a stronger position to take some of those personal assets out of that pool as well, and put them to the side. So I think, you know, the reason personal assets are put in there is because there's not enough equity sitting within the balance sheet of the business, and the banks then need to supplement that by getting some personal security to call on that, which is rarely called on, but it's still that they have that as a comfort factor. So my advice there would be just to strengthen the balance sheet as much as possible. Any retained profits, put that off debt. The lower the debt, the more secure the balance sheet. The more secure the balance sheet, the less likely a funder is going to rely on some of those personal assets. And, you know, and also, you know, just it's not necessarily banking related, but, you know, things like personal guarantees and whatnot, just I would always just be conscious of when to give those personal guarantees, even to create trade creditors and whatnot, and unsecured creditors, because if you don't have to give it, don't give it. That's my old restructuring hat being put on that, because, you know, if that can be negotiated out, absolutely do that, because that's a further risk element personally for directors. That, you know, if you've got a strong enough balance sheet, that they shouldn't, again, same thought process, that the unsecured creditors shouldn't need to rely on any personal guarantee to get through, because of the balance sheet's strong enough.
So what if I am a small business owner and I've the bank saying I am going to have to, say, put up my home for collateral for a business loan? Are there any kind of precautions that I can take that will make me feel better about doing that? Because that's a pretty big thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say to that is just make sure that you've got a really good, clear business plan and strategy for the business, and make sure that that strategy has been reviewed and revised, and you've got some good people around you to help execute on that strategy, because it is, you know, it is a lonely kind of road being out there as a director. You know, as you say, you're putting all your assets on the line and you're relying on the management team and the people around you to help fulfill that strategy. But I mean, I would be making sure that strategy is clearly articulated and it's bought in by the management team, or your key people at least. So it's not just you as an owner going, this is my strategy and here's how we're going to roll it out. Have the owner say, here's my strategy, but then get the management team to roll it out, because that'll test their capability, and you're not just solely relying on one individual to get things through. I mean, it is inevitable that they have to provide, you know, often with startup businesses or small businesses, personal guarantees, but if you surround yourself by good people and have got a really well articulated strategy, now that strategy, you know, changes over time, which all of them do, then you can pivot very quickly to deal with that. And you know, part of that strategy, even from a funding point of view, I always stress this three-way forecast for a business owner to be across their numbers. There's got to be no surprises for them. So if you know, and you know, have one key metric in your business that if that key metric, you know, starts to decline, that's a reason for you to start pivoting or start looking at headcount or maybe start growing and putting some more risk on the table. But I can't stress enough knowing the numbers and having good visibility of that. It's one thing knowing them, but it's pointless, you know, knowing your numbers. But if you don't have the visibility, as in 3 months, 6 months, and you know, some business owners might say, well, I don't know what's happening 3 months ahead or what's happening 6 months ahead. Well, something is better than nothing as far as a pipeline forecasting and sales forecasting. And, you know, that would be a, you know, that would give me comfort, you know, in that respect, and give the business owner comfort that they've got some good visibility.
Mm. And it's so much easier for businesses to do that these days with all of the advances in the accounting software, all the reporting that's achievable within that, the forecasting. So there is kind of really no excuse not to do it, is there?
What I would say is, I mean, yes, you've got accounting packages like Xero and Myob and others that do provide that ability to do that. But it's actually getting it produced every month and you know, dissecting it. So, you know, if it's not your external accountant that's providing it, at the very minimum, it should be the bookkeeper within the business, and they should be allocating a time in the month, the 10th day of the month, typically, to close off the previous month and to sit down. And I would suggest, I'm a big advocate, Advantage, we're all big advocates for one-page everything. So a one-page dashboard, and in that dashboard, you've got, you know, half a dozen key metrics around, you know, could be cash conversion, debtor days, creditor days, profit versus budget. So half a, like you're driving your car down the road, you've got a dashboard in front of you of you know, how fast you're traveling and whatnot. So if you've got all those key financial metrics, and do we have enough in the pipeline from a sales perspective? Depends what type of business it is, but if it's, you know, a SaaS business, a software as a service, then, you know, it's all about, you know, you need a massive pipeline and to be able to convert that pipeline. So if that's what your business is about, then you need to have good visibility on that. And are we hitting our gross pipeline of $2 million at any point in time, of which we're going to convert 30% of it? And that 30% of it's going to be our revenue for the next 3 months type thing. So, you know, I'd encourage you to, or the business owners to, know what that one-page dashboard should look like and have it produced and sitting in front of your desk, you know, on the 10th day of every month. You know, it's not going to be perfect. There's going to be a few movements, but at least it's going to raise more questions about why is this happening or what's going on there and all that kind of stuff. And then over time, you just get used to that level of visibility, and then there's going to be more, you know, sophisticated questions come out of it. So definitely one-page dashboard.
Yeah, and at the very least, that gives you an idea of how much capital you need to survive and then what you might need to thrive. So when you go into that those banks, you know, you've got all your data, you take it with you, they can see how you're doing and what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's right. And I wouldn't, as a business owner, I wouldn't entirely rely on the numbers that are produced to you as an owner. I think you've got to have that ability to question, which a lot of them business owners are great at doing. So if you get something from your external accountant or your internal accountant, just don't take it as read. Critique it and ask loads of questions, because at the end of the day, the bank's going to be asking you the questions, as in the business owner. And if you're, you know, fumbling over stuff, then you know, that's going to be a lack of confidence. So I'd make sure that you've done a bit of a dummy test or a trial run before you meet with the bank, and just know your numbers, be right across it. Then that's going to just exude confidence. And if you can answer a question at that bank meeting or with, you know, whoever it is, you just say, look, I'll take that offline. I'll look into that, but that's unusual or whatever it is. But certainly know your numbers, and that's just going to elevate that confidence. Because the banks look at character. They've got the five C's of providing credit to business. One of those, the biggest of the five C's, is the character of the business owner. So if they are confident, they know the numbers, they know their strategy, they know where they are in the market, they know the opportunities. You know, they've had a good look under their bonnet themselves and looked at their SWOT analysis, and you know, they're bringing the management team along the journey with them and not just doing it alone. I think that's an important thing. If the management team aren't capable of being on that journey, then maybe they shouldn't be, you know, part of the business, because that's, you know, it shouldn't just be a sole, you know, one guy driving you know, the business forward. It should be your management team, and really, you know, the owner's setting the direction of travel, but it's the management team who are actually executing on the plan. So that's so plenty of things to do to garner confidence.
Yeah, so we've kind of talked about the banks would be doing all their due diligence on whether the business owner is worthy of being awarded a loan or whatever. But what about my due diligence? Like, what should I be looking at from a bank or an investor or a funder? Like, how do I decide whether they're going to be the right potential investor for my business?
This is the company director looking at the bank and seeing if they're the right investor?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's, well, I think you've got to assess.
I mean, I guess it's very individual, but there must be some criteria.
Yeah, there's criteria like flexibility too. I mean, to be able to, this comes back to the earlier thing of trust and having a good rapport, you know, with the bank and the funder, because there are going to be times when, you know, there are kind of urgent needs maybe for cash, or you know, there's been a blip in the road at some stage, and you need to be able to call in your funder. So funders having that have demonstrated that flexibility and commercial approach to businesses, you know, some funders might just land and just go on to their next deal and not, you know, kind of talk to the customer, but, you know, until the next, you know, event happens, whether it's a distress or whatnot. But I think, but a good funder will be someone who's, you know, regularly kind of checking in with the director, and if the director gets a good sense of that in the relationship, it's you know, someone that they can call upon and have a good honest conversation with, because often, you know, directors don't think that they can have a you know, a good honest conversation with their relationship banker for whatever reason, and that's probably not a great, you know, situation to have, because then early warning signs are missed, and we're a good relationship manager within the bank will pick up on that and kind of escalate that to get a solution for the customer. So having that, I'd say, how do you pick the right investor? It's like, you know, picking a good work colleague or a you know, a good friend. You need to have a good level of trust with that banker and know that they know your industry, you know, that are flexible enough to move with any uncertainty that happens, you know, within the industry. So, what, you know, some questions around that.
So what about, I've done all my paperwork, I'm exuding confidence, I can answer all the questions, but yet I'm still rejected by the bank. What kind of advice would you have to someone who's, you know, they've done all the hard work, they need the money, but their loan's been rejected? How can they kind of stay motivated and resilient and keep going and then maybe try again in a few months' time? And will the bank give you a reason, or will they just flat out reject you?
No, they'll give you a reason. They'll definitely give you a reason. And, you know, it'll often be around creditworthiness. And you know, or it might be that earlier example of working capital. So the company's asking for $1 million, but the bank's only willing to give $500,000. So the banker really expecting, you know, the business owner to go back and look at that other working, you know, within the business. But let's just say that the company owner squeezed all the working capital it can out of the business. It's got perfect debtor days, perfect creditor days, perfect stock days, and they're still not getting a land. I mean, I think the one thing I would do, I'm going back to this resilience survey that we've conducted, this 50 questions for highly resilient businesses. So it's across strategy, working capital, business intelligence within the business, governance, sales effectiveness. If you assess the business on that and you go, oh, actually, I'm only doing 17 out of the 50 traits for highly successful businesses. And I should say some of these things are based on the Rockefeller habits, things like that. You know, the 50 traits for highly successful business. So they might go, well, I'm only doing 17 out of 50. Maybe over the next year, I'll focus on doing these three things to make my business more resilient, and then come back to the bank again after that. And it might be a case of just kind of bedding down what you're doing, keep doing what you're doing, but just making the business more stronger, more robust, and, you know, go again. I wouldn't take it. It'll be a rejection for a reason. And I'd also just caution, you know, I wouldn't just go straight into any kind of high interest rate loans just because they get knocked back by a kind of a top tier bank. You're getting knocked back for a reason. So, and it's good to identify what that is and work on it. And once you work on that, then you're back. Because if you get a loan and it's, you know, kind of extortionate interest rates, that can put you further back as well, because all of a sudden if you can't service a 6% or 8% bank loan, there's definitely no way they're going to service a higher interest rate loan. So I wouldn't necessarily jump straight to that. I would understand, step back a bit, look at the business, and you know, on our website, actually, you can do it's a free resilience assessment that people can go on and do, just to get a sense of where they're at. I would encourage that. And that what it'll do is it'll just give them half a dozen things to work on themselves over the next 12 months and go again.
Mm. I think we're running out of time. I guess one final question, I'm just wondering, are there any trends that you might be seeing that in terms of securing finance that you think people should be aware of?
Yeah, there's, I mean, look, there's certainly a lot of cash around the economy at the moment, but I think, so there's no shortage of that, but it's really, you know, the lenders are being cautious about, you know, where to place their capital. I mean, and lenders are also kind of attuned to the various economic factors at the moment. So, you know, the ATO is kind of starting to gradually escalate as well. So there's about, I think there's about $35 billion under tax arrears at the moment, and ATO are starting to ramp up their activity as far as DPNs and all that kind of stuff. So, so there's a trend kind of in that direction as well. And I'm not saying there's going to be a rump of insolvencies, but insolvency levels are back to what they were pre-COVID. And not that I think there's going to be a massive run on insolvency companies, but there is a gradual trend that's going to get, you know, that's going to increase. And I think, you know, there is a trend for companies going towards those second tier lenders if they're getting knocked back by the banks. I just think lenders are just more vigilant than ever these days. They do insist on three-way forecasts. While lender worth their salt will insist on a three-way forecast, and you know, cash flow forecasts and a business plan. So that's and those trends from a banking perspective have been going on for some time. Particularly since the GFC, they're, you know, a lot more attuned to that. But just got to have your ducks in a row, have your pack ready to send to the bank, and just be all over your numbers.
Mm. Thank you, Kevin. Such great advice, and so many things for our listeners to think about. So thank you for joining us this morning.
It's quite all right. It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.